All right, well, good morning. You know, it's funny, I moved the podium and all the notes went onto the ground. Usually I have to take time for you guys to calm down, and you went and did that quickly today. It's not very convenient, church. All right. Well, hey, welcome again. Again, happy Father's Day. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here. Great to have you here with us today. We are in the second week of a three-week series entitled A Light in the Darkness. And this is a series that we've been doing on the Old Testament book of Habakkuk. Now, if you weren't here last week and you're going, why in the world are you doing a series on that obscure little book from the Old Testament? Let me get you kind of get caught up here. You can always, if you missed last week and you want to, you can jump online. It's on our website. It's also on our Facebook page. We're starting to experiment a little bit with streaming the second service during the message up there on the Facebook page. You can catch it in either one of those places if you want to subject yourself to more of this. But what you had happen last week, we just talked about how we're doing this book. We're spending time looking at Habakkuk because what Habakkuk has to say is relevant to all of us and to all of our lives. When you read through Habakkuk, you discover there are things that he sees, things that he experiences that are difficult for him to see, difficult for him to experience, difficult for him to reconcile with what he believes about God. And the thing is that this is just how life works. Sometimes when we're fortunate, life is lived up on the mountaintop. Everything's great. But if you live life long enough, eventually life will bring you down into the valley. And sometimes things are dark and difficult in the valley. That's not happy news. It's not go-lucky kind of news. But if you live life long enough, you know it is true. And the great thing about the book of Habakkuk is he speaks to us about what to do when we're in the valley. He speaks to us about what we can do when we still want to believe that God is good, even though life is bad. In fact, Habakkuk speaks to all of us regardless of where we're at. He talks to us about how to find a light in that dark place. And so if you're in a place where life is difficult right now, what he's saying in this book is for you. And if you're in a place where life is good right now, enjoy that. Be grateful for it. But again, life doesn't let you stay there. And eventually it's going to bring you into a difficult place to some degree, and you're going to need what Habakkuk is talking about. And it could be that God has someone in your life right now who's struggling. This is every bit as much about somebody else as it is about you. And God has you there so that you can share with them what Habakkuk is talking about. And so in each of the three chapters of his book, Habakkuk gives us a different tool designed to help us find light. And so last week in chapter 1, we saw Habakkuk said to us, hey, when you're struggling, what you need to do is you need to wrestle. You need to wrestle. And by wrestling, we mean that you're going to express. You're going to express to God the questions and the doubts that you have about what you see going on in your life that you're struggling with. And then you're going to embrace. You're going to look to see what the Bible tells you about who God is. And you're going to hold on to those truths for dear life. In chapter 1, we saw we express and we embrace. In chapter 2, though, Habakkuk would say to us, hey, you don't just wrestle, but you add to your wrestling watching. You watch as well as wrestle. Right at the beginning of chapter 2, Habakkuk writes this. He says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look and see what he will say to me and what answer I'm to be given to this complaint. Right at the beginning of the chapter, he begins to use this imagery of a watchman who's going to climb up onto the city wall. He's going to get into the guard post. He's going to spend the night up there, eyes peeled, attentive, watching to see something different, an enemy coming, something out of the ordinary. Habakkuk's like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take on that job, except my eyes are going to be peeled. I am going to be attentive. I'm going to be looking to see, how's God going to respond? I've been wrestling. I've been expressing to him, what is God going to do now in light of the wrestling that I've done? Because again, all of us, we're going to find ourselves in this place. And so Habakkuk says, hey, yeah, you need to wrestle, but you also need to watch. And sooner or later, we're all going to have cause to wrestle and to watch. For example, last week I shared with you about my brother-in-law, Dave, about the accident he was in, the fire, the explosion, the months that he spent in the U of M Trauma Burn Center fighting for his life, and how Dave passed away there. Now, as I went through that whole experience with my family, for me, the hardest part about all that was watching Dave's kids. Dave had 5 kids, 3 boys, 2 girls. Neat kids. Youngest one is named Osborne. Dave and his wife Sarah spent some time in Norway. 3 of their kids have these weird Norwegian names, right? So you have Osborne, just months old when everything happened. No idea what's going on. And then the 2 older boys were Benjamin and Arnstein. They were 12 and 14 when this whole thing went down. Neat, neat young men. Recently, my wife and I went backpacking, took Benjamin and Arnstein with us for a week. Benjamin's just this intellectual kid, loves to learn, is always soaking things in. Just, you know, my wife's reading a book on architecture, and he comes over just to listen to the thing. I mean, just how his brain works. His brother Arnstein, super active, really dry sense of humor. I love the kid, right? And so, neat guys. And then you have the 2 girls. You have Celia and Violet. They were 9 and 6 when the accident happened. Celia, just this sweet servant's heart, just loves to help. We had the girls staying with us for a portion of the time when Dave was in the hospital. And like, I would find Celia just sweeping the floor, doing the dishes, mothering her younger siblings. She just wanted to serve. And then you have Violet, who, I love Violet, all right? You don't turn your back on the surf, and you don't turn your back on Violet, all right? They'll both take you down, all right? I mean, she's just a fight great. Like, we go up north, take the girls up north with us to vacation with my family. Violet walks out onto the deck. My brother's enjoying a cigar. She walks up to him, and she sees him smoking. She says, your lungs are black, and you're going to die. Just walks away, right? Right? Well, I got Violet. We're in this lighthouse, and we're walking up the steps of the lighthouse, right? And there are these metal grated steps, and you can see through them. And I look down, a couple floors down. There's my dad and his wife, Trish. And I said, Violet, we can see Papa and Trish. But we could spit on them from here. No sooner are the words out of my mouth, right? I'm like, ah! No filter. It was. It's like, you got to watch what you say around this kid, right? I mean, just neat kids. Seeing Dave in the hospital, so badly burned, so completely atrophied, I didn't even recognize him anymore. That was hard. Holding Sarah, the first day in the hospital, tears are streaming down her face. I have no answers whatsoever for the questions she has. That was hard. Just the roller coaster ride we took with Dave, where it was like, oh, he's going to get better, oh, he's getting worse, oh, he's getting better, oh, he's getting worse. That was hard. But watching what happened to those kids, watching Ozzy, just no idea who his dad is. No clue. Watching Benjamin and Arnstein, watching their grandfather, a man who lost his own father at a young age, come up to those boys and say, hey, boys, you shouldn't have to, but you're going to need to grow up a lot sooner than you ever should have. Your mom's going to need you to help her and look out for them. Seeing that weight put on their shoulders. Seeing the look on Violet's face the day her mom told her, we're taking your dad off of the breathing machine and he's going to die. Watching Violet, this wild woman who's afraid of nothing, become deathly afraid of germs and infection because that's what killed her daddy. Far and away, hardest thing about that whole experience was watching what happened to those kids. But that's life. Sooner or later, to some degree, life takes you off of the mountain and it puts you in the valley and it gives you cause to wrestle and it gives you cause to watch. Now, what does it mean to watch? Well, I would argue that Habakkuk talks about that in chapter 2. Points us to four things that we can do to watch well. First one is simply this. It's to listen. To listen. Again, he says, I'm going to stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me. Habakkuk gets up there and he gets up in the watchtower and he listens. In chapter 1, he's been doing the talking. He's been expressing. But in chapter 2, he shuts his mouth and he does some listening. Because you see, in any healthy relationship that we have, healthy being the operative word, communication goes both ways. Yeah, there's a time to speak. There's a time to express. But there's also a time to listen. And Habakkuk is going to do everything he can to put himself in a place where he can hear from God. See, I would contend, if you are struggling, if you're in a dark place right now, God wants to speak to you. He's got something to say to you in the midst of that. You read the Bible. God speaks all the time in a host of different ways to all kinds of different people. I don't believe he's under some kind of gag order today. No, I think he's got something to say to you right where you're at. Now, some of us will hear that, we'll wonder, okay, well, if that's the case, then why don't I hear him? Why isn't God saying something to me then? And that's a complicated question. And I don't mean to oversimplify it, but I would contend one of the primary reasons we don't hear God as much as we'd like to is we're not terribly good at listening. Just think about it. We live in a culture where listening doesn't come very naturally to us. Like, when's the last time you sat down with another human being with no distractions? No TV, no radio, no video games, no kids. Neither one of you had one of these in your pocket. Neither one of you, it was not turned on. No cell phones whatsoever. When's the last time you sat down with another human being with no distractions? When's the last time you sat down with another human being and you were more intent on hearing what they had to say to you than you were intent on saying something to them? And we tend not to listen very well with each other, let alone with God. God's got something to say, but if we're going to hear it, we need to put ourselves in a place well, we can listen. That means that we're going to get alone, just us and God, and we're going to remove all the distractions. We're going to turn off the TV. We're going to turn off the radio. God help us, we're going to turn off the cell phone. Young moms, you may need to duct tape the children to the floor, right? Feed them some Benadryl, but you know, I mean, as much as it's within our control, we're going to remove the distractions. And we're going to try and hear what God is saying to us. We're going to be more intent on listening than we are talking. Now, how does God speak? I think a number of different ways. I would argue that first and foremost, God speaks to us in the Scriptures. That in his wisdom, he chose something external, objective, as the most clear way to communicate to us. I'm going to get alone with that book and try and hear from God. I think he also communicates through circumstances. I think he communicates through other people. If you're following Jesus, the Scriptures teach us God's Spirit lives inside of you. He can speak to your spirit through his as it resides in you. God's looking to speak to us. Our job is to put ourselves in a spot where we could actually hear him, where we're prone and we're concentrated on listening and we're more likely to hear what he has to say. So as Habakkuk begins, he's like, hey, I want you to watch. That starts with listening and then it continues with writing. We read next, Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. Write down the revelation. Habakkuk gets in his watchtower. He gets intent on listening to God. And then God speaks and God tells him, write this thing down. And I think he has him write it down for two reasons. First, for the benefit of others. What God is going to tell Habakkuk he's going to do, there's some time that elapses between when God says it and when God does it. And as Habakkuk writes this thing down, what he's written down serves as a testimony for others later on when this thing comes to be fulfilled. But I think the second reason he has him write it down and he'd have us write it down is for our benefit. Our benefit. See, sometimes life is difficult and you wrestle and then you begin to watch and you're listening for God and God speaks. Like you get alone, you open up your Bible, it's like the words jump off of the page. Like somebody wrote them just for you and what you're going through. Or you're listening for God and there's somebody in your life who's just walk you respect and they say something about what's going on. It's like the heavens opened up and God himself gave you a message. Or sometimes you're listening for God and something inside of you in a way you cannot explain but you cannot deny is speaking to what's going on in your world. Habakkuk is saying, write that down. Put pen to paper and do so for your benefit. Because you see, when just the life that we live, the world that we live in, there are things that are going to try and steal away what God has said to you. Jesus talks about a very real spiritual enemy who is intent on stealing, killing, and destroying. You're struggling, you're holding on, you're expressing, you're embracing, you cry out to God. You listen, he speaks. The enemy's going to try and get you to doubt, did God really say that? Is God really telling you the truth? Can you really count on him? Or sometimes just life will do this. Sometimes life rages around us, and things are so busy and so intense, it'll cause you to look back and go, okay, what did God say exactly? Because things are so nuts right now, it's just all kind of fuzzy when I got that word. Or life will rage, and you look back and you go, was that really God talking? Because I had Mediterranean that night. Like, I'm not sure, was that God or the garlic talking to me? I don't know, right? When you write that thing down, I'm telling you, it's like an anchor. Just holds you steady when the storms of life rage. For example, deciding to come to Faith Covenant Church, leaving the church that I was at and deciding to come here, gang, that's a decision I made because I really believed God was speaking to me about that. Like, if you were to go back then and steal my journals, I don't know why you would, they're boring for the most part, but if you were to steal my journals from that time, there are pages and pages where I'm writing down all the different ways I feel like God was calling me to leave that role there and take this role here. I got here, and you know what happened? Life raged like crazy. I mean, there's a ton of new here. New congregation, new staff, new role, new leadership. There were challenges here with our facility renovations, with staffing, with our culture. You got everything going on with Dave. There's just anxiety that I'm experiencing in this new thing. I mean, just life raged. And if I'm honest, there were times where I would look back in the midst of life raging, and I was like, okay, was that really God talking there? Or I just get myself into something I had no business getting myself into, right? I would go back and I would open up those journals. It was like an anchor. I'd look at all the ways it was like, nope, there was God speaking to me in his word. I remember that. There was a way God just orchestrated circumstances. I remember that. There was a way God spoke to me through other people. I remember that. There were ways God spoke to me. Frankly, they were weird. I was uncomfortable with them. Like, I had multiple people come up to me the weekend I announced I was leaving my previous church, and they said to me, hey, about a month ago, we had a dream that you were leaving this church and going somewhere else like that. Freaked me out. I looked at that stuff, it was like an anchor. That wasn't the garlic sauce, that was God talking, right? Write it down. So Habakkuk would say, listen, write, and then wait. Everybody look at the person next to you and say, wait. Isn't that exciting? Probably goes without saying, waiting is difficult. One of the great theologians of the 80s, T.M. Petty, said, waiting is the hardest part. Only the old people got that joke, right? All right, never mind. Maybe not second service. Waiting's difficult. I mean, look, we live in a 5G world. We got smartphones in our pockets. We get the interweb at our fingertips. I just push a button and it gets delivered the next day. Waiting is difficult. By its very nature, waiting is difficult. Like when I was a kid, there were certain lines you could cross with mom where you received the ultimate sentence. The ultimate sentence was, go to your room and wait. Wait until you're... Yeah, you got... Anybody else get that sentence, right? You know, now, when I was a kid, when that was a sentence, you knew it was over. Because if you got sent to your room to wait till dad got home, it meant you were going to get a spanking. Just guaranteed. That's how it went, right? It was torture waiting for that. Because my dad did not mess around when it came to spankings. He was serious about that stuff. In fact, I'm old enough, I can remember this. Some of you, this would never happen today. I remember going to Cedar Point as a child. And my dad walks out of the gift shop at Cedar Point with a wooden paddle. It is 30 inches long. It is 4 inches wide. Written across it are the words, the Board of Education. At the gift shop in Cedar Point, right? He used it. He educated our misbehaving backsides with that thing, all right? I mean, the most glorious day in the Rice House for Children is when my two younger brothers waited for my parents to go out for dinner. They took the Board of Education and they fed it into the wood stove. Just burn the thing up, right? I mean, you get sent to your room and you're just waiting, right? Torture. Sometimes it was so bad, Dad would get home from work and we would go out and ask for our spanking. Children would be like, can I please just get this over with? Because you couldn't take the waiting anymore. If you were really bad, you know what he would do? He'd make you wait some more. He'd go out and cut the grass or something. You're just in there just trying to get this thing over with. Waiting is difficult. In this instance, though, we're waiting. And difficult though it may be, we're waiting for God. We're waiting for him to do what he had us write down. Some of you right now are waiting. You're waiting for somebody who you love to come and find Christ. Some of you are waiting for something in your marriage to change. Some of you are waiting for someone who you love who's sick to get better. Some of you are waiting for someone who's in an addiction to be set free. Some of you are waiting for God to provide a job. Some of you are waiting for your child who's just caught up in rebellion to come back home. Some of you are waiting for God to do something different in your church. And as you're waiting, you can testify. Waiting by its very nature is difficult. I think that's why Habakkuk says what he does about waiting. He says, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks to an end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. Wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. Part of watching is waiting. But listen, that thing you wrote down, if that was from God, if God sent the revelation, it certainly will come. If God sent the revelation, it will not prove false. If God said it, you can take it to the bank. Our job is to wait. And here's the deal. Until it's God's time, you can't force it. But once it's God's time, nothing is going to be able to stop it. Our job is to wait. Though we can't see it coming, we wait. Though there's no sign of it arriving, we wait. Though it feels like it's never going to come to pass, we wait. God's delays are not God's denials. If he said it, you can take it to the bank. Though it linger, wait for it. Wait for it. Which leads us to Habakkuk's fourth thing, and that's faith. Faith. See, when you talk about waiting, you can't not talk about faith. Because waiting requires faith. The two go hand in hand. Did you know some of the things that God told Habakkuk were going to happen? It was years before those things took place. Some of the things God told Habakkuk was going to happen, they didn't happen until after Habakkuk had died. They happened, but Habakkuk didn't see them until he was on the other side of glory. Waiting takes faith. I think that's why Habakkuk writes. He says, "See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. But the righteous person will live by his faith." The righteous will live by faith. Now, what exactly is faith in this context? In the original language, this word that we have translated here as faith is written in. It includes this idea of holding on. There's a certainty. There's an assurance. And we're going to hold on to that thing because we are certain, we are assured, even though our circumstances or our vision doesn't lend itself to that, we're holding on for dear life anyway. It's a word that's oftentimes used to describe faithfulness in marriage in the Old Testament. Two people holding on to one another no matter what. As I was doing research, I came across an article on a couple who had been married for 60 years. 60 years. That's a holding on that's rare in our culture today. One of the questions they asked in an interview, they're like, okay, 60 years, that's a long time. I'm sure there were some ups and downs with that. During some of the downs, did you ever think about letting go? Was divorce ever an option for you guys? Loved their answer. Loved their answer. Divorce? Was that ever an option? Divorce, never. Murder, frequently. All right? Not letting go, though, right? Faith is a decision to hold on to God no matter what. Certain, assured that he will be true, and that he can be trusted. I like the way Oswald Chambers tries to define faith in this context. He says, faith is deliberate confidence in the character of God, whose ways we may not understand at the time. Faith is deliberate confidence in the character of God whose ways you may not understand at the time. Faith says, I don't get it. I don't understand. But I am choosing to hold on to you, God. I'm choosing to. See, faith recognizes that right now we only see in part. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the information to everything going on in our lives and our world and how all that integrates. And faith says, you know what? I'm holding on anyway. I'm holding on anyway. Trusting. A day is going to come where I'm going to be able to look back and go, I couldn't see it then, but I see it now. And God, you were proved true. And though I couldn't understand it then, God, you were right. All I can say is, God, you were right. I think that's why Habakkuk ends chapter 2 the way he does. He says, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth stand silent before him. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. As Habakkuk is listening, God tells him, this is what I'm going to do. And as he is left to wait, Habakkuk chooses faith. He holds on with certainty and assurance to this idea, God's in the temple. He is on his throne. He is in control. A day is coming where he will be proved true, where he will be proved right. If you're wrestling today, if you're in a dark place and you're struggling, if you're at this place where you got nowhere else to turn. All your ideas, all your resources, they've just evaporated. They've run out. If you're in a place where you feel like control is just, it's a joke anymore, Habakkuk would say, remember, hold on. The Lord is in his temple. If you're in a spot where your knees hurt because you've been praying so long and the answers are just bouncing back off of the ceiling, Habakkuk would say, no, hold on. The Lord is in his temple. If you've gotten to the place where people laugh at your faith and they mock your certainty and they think your assurance is a joke, Habakkuk would say, no, hold on. The Lord is in his temple. Sooner or later, a day is going to come for those who have faith. We're going to look back and we're going to say, I couldn't see it then, but I see it now. And God, you were proved true. And while I couldn't understand it then, you were proved right. It comes with faith. So in chapter 1, Habakkuk says, wrestle. Express your questions. Express your doubts. Let God have it. And then embrace. Hold on to who the scriptures tell you he is for dear life. And then in chapter 2, he says to us, okay, now you're going to listen. You're going to write it down. You're going to watch. You're going to watch. And as you're watching, you're going to be waiting and holding on to faith. And then next week in chapter 3, we're going to see him tell us to worship. And I'm telling you right now, there is something sweet and beautiful in the worship of chapter 3. Now, our tendency is to skip over 1 and 2 and just jump right to 3. It just doesn't work that way. You got to go through 1 and 2. You have to wrestle and you have to watch if you're going to truly experience the kind of worship that Habakkuk is talking about in 3. But it's a sweet and beautiful thing that we're going to see there. Would you stand with me, please?